Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's Lifetime Income.
And I'm Chris Prytower. This week on the program, we're going to discuss Social Security, or what some are calling social insecurity. I recently read that income from Social Security is estimated to have reduced the poverty rate for Americans age 65 and older from about 40% to below 10%. That sounds pretty good. But for anyone listening who doesn't quite understand the challenges of Social Security, I have a helpful story. Young Chuck moved to Texas and bought a donkey from a farmer for $100. The farmer agreed to deliver the donkey the next day. The next day he drove up and said, "Sorry, son, but I have some bad news. The donkey died." Chuck replied, "Well, then just give me my money back." The farmer said, "Can't do it. I spent it already." Chuck said, "Okay, then just bring me the dead donkey." The farmer said, "What you gonna do with him?" Chuck said, "I'm going to raffle him off." The farmer said, "Can't raffle off a dead donkey." Chuck said, "Sure I can. Watch me. I just won't tell anybody he's dead." A month later, the farmer met up with Chuck and asked, "What happened with that dead donkey?" Chuck said, "I raffled him off. I sold 500 tickets at $2 apiece and made a profit of $898. The farmer said, "Didn't anyone complain?" Chuck said, "Just the guy who won. So I gave him his $2 back." Now, today, Chuck works for the government in the Social Security Administration. And, Jim, recently, Social Security has been in the news as the trustees just came out with their latest report. And the news was alarming as to the program's financial soundness. So what should you do? Should you take it early? Should you wait to full retirement age? Or should you delay benefits now for greater benefits later? So, Jim, let's discuss the latest trustees report and any concerns our listeners may have about their current or future benefits.
Well, if you want to take a look at the trustees report that just came out, Chris, here's the problem. Since 2010, spending on benefits has exceeded taxes paid into the system. So they're paying out more in benefits than they're taking in taxes. Now, it hasn't been a problem until this year. The shortfall was made up from the $3 trillion in non-marketable bonds held in the trust fund. Those bonds pay interest, and it's the interest from those bonds that has made up the shortfall in tax revenues. However, beginning in 2018, spending will exceed not only tax revenues, but the interest earned on the Social Security Trust Fund. And according to this year's released report, according to the trustees, Social Security Trust Fund will be depleted by the year 2034. The Medicare Insurance Fund will be depleted by 2026. And the disability fund will be broke by 2032. Now, this assumes that nothing is done. The real issue here is this could have been fixed a long time ago, but politicians prefer to wait till there's a crisis where they will point the fingers, as they always do, at everyone else but themselves and their own lack of responsibility. We will find out ourselves sooner rather than later being forced to deal with this issue. There are some very easy fixes to the solution. One of them that they began, I think it was in the 90s, was they moved the eligibility age further out because people, as you're listening to this program, with health, increases in medicine, people are living longer. So for boomers, full Social Security age is 66. Gen Xers, it's probably going to be age 67. So by simply moving back the retirement eligibility age, you would go a long way to solving many of these problems.
That's right. I do remember them moving the eligibility age. Is that something our listeners should be concerned about in terms of this program remaining solvent?
You know, Chris, the one thing that the government has, they will never run out of money. they can always print this stuff. For example, if there was, $100 billion shortfall in Social Security, the Treasury could simply issue $100 billion of bonds. Then they would instruct the Fed to print the money to buy them. And there's no legal reason why the system couldn't borrow from the Treasury forever, as the trust fund is extinguished.
Well, you know, Jim, it reminds me of the politician who said he felt just terrible about shooting a 78-year-old man, but he noted that on the bright side, it did give him a great idea about how to fix Social Security. But it isn't one of the real reasons, Jim, why the system's in trouble, is that there are fewer workers today supporting retirees?
This was an issue that's probably, Chris, has been growing. It was fairly stable for almost half a century. When Social Security first came into existence, kind of hard to believe, but it goes to show you how the demographics of the country have changed. There were 159 workers for each person receiving a benefit. That ratio dropped to 40. Then eventually it stabilized around 3 workers in the 70s and remained there until last decade, where it has fallen below 3 for the first time in half a century. Currently, the worker ratio to beneficiary is 2.8 workers supporting every beneficiary. That's down from 3.3 workers in 2007. The result of that is 10,000 baby boomers entering into the Social Security and the Medicare system every single day of the year. So we're down to 2.8 workers, and that's one of the real issues here.
Well, with so many boomers heading into retirement, let me remind our listeners that here at Financial Sense, we do help our clients with these kinds of important decisions face-to-face. So for any of our listeners who may have real concerns about their current or future benefits, we can be reached toll-free at 888-486-3939. So Jim, with the system running out of money, what should retirees do? Should they take their benefits early or wait until later to receive a larger benefit?
Well, here's the problem, Chris, and this is different with every individual, and you'll see that when we discuss this week's case study. The problem with taking Social Security early is, for example, you can take it at age 62. You forfeit part of your benefits. At age 62, you only get 75% of your full Social Security benefits versus, let's say, waiting to age 66 or 67, which is full retirement age. You also run the risk, if you need to work part-time, you could forfeit even further benefits. And this is what happens to many individuals. They take their benefits at age 62 and they say, oh, you know, I can't live on this, so I need to work. And they start working. Unfortunately, if you earn too much prior to age 65, they are going to penalize you. In 2018, you can earn up to $17,040 without being penalized. If you earn any amount above the $17,000, you lose $1 of benefit for every $2 earned. So it's not only that you're, let's say, getting only 75% of your benefit, but should you decide that you still need to work part-time or full-time, you are going to lose and have some of those benefits phased out.
Now, what if you were to wait until age 66 or even age 67, which is full retirement age? Are there work limitations? I know it used to be that they allowed you to earn more before you gave back benefits.
The good news is they solved this back in 2001. And they basically said, look, if you wait till full retirement age, 66 or 67, depending on your birthday, there are no limitations in terms of how much you can earn. This was something that goes back to 2001. Now, there are also reasons that you still may not want to take your benefits at age 66 and 67, because if you delay receiving your benefits until age 70, those benefits are going to grow at a guaranteed 8% a year until age 70. So in other words, let's say your full retirement age is 66. If you delay those benefits for 4 years, your Social Security benefit at age 70 would be 32% higher if you delay receiving them. So there are some advantages to not just taking it at full retirement age, but also delaying taking benefits for as long as you can.
Well, and 32%, that's a big difference. I read somewhere that good things come to those who wait. But Jim, are there any reasons you can think of for taking benefits early at age 62, even though you only get 75% of your full benefit?
You know, there's three common reasons that are commonly given for taking benefits early. Now, a couple of these are going to make sense. Number one, you need the money. You just simply, you know, maybe you got a pension, maybe you were laid off, or you're just not making enough money. Number two, as you'll see in this week's case study, your health. And number three is by taking it early, investing the money to grow your nest egg. But, you know, Chris, I don't know very many people that can consistently grow their nest egg by 8% a year versus what the government does. The government guarantees it will grow by 8% a year. But those are typically the three major reasons. Health and money are probably the two I would say would qualify for taking it early.
Those are really important reasons to take the money. Let's dive into that a little more, Jim. Let's explore the thinking behind each one of these possible options.
Well, I mean, there are cases where a couple or an individual simply needs the money to live as they are unable to work or they want to enjoy retirement while they are relatively young or healthy. I've had individuals wanted to take it at age 62 and they go, look, at 62, I could use it now. It'll allow me to travel, something I may not be able to do when I'm in my 70s or 80s. Or, for example, you may have a situation where the main breadwinner was laid off or lost their job in a merger, takeover, or an economic downturn, as happened to so many individuals, Chris, back in the Great Recession that lasted for almost 2 years between 2007 and 2009. Now, the second one is something that we often come into quite often, is you're dealing with poor health. If you are suffering from a long-term disease or poor general health and your life expectancy is not that great or long, that would be a good enough reason to take your benefits early. We have two clients right now, one with heart disease and the other with cancer, where we recommended taking the benefits early. Now, the health argument, and this is depending, once again, on individual cases and especially those that are married, the health argument isn't bulletproof because you may be unwell, but by taking your benefit early, if you die first, you're going to leave less money to your surviving spouse if you were the main breadwinner. In the case above, both individuals were both single in poor health, so it made a lot more sense to take the benefits early. The last reason to take benefits early and invest it in the stock market for a higher return in the hopes of creating a larger nest egg, I just find not very credible. Few investors can compound their wealth at 8%. So if you look at the reasons above to take your benefit at age 62 and forfeit 25% of your benefit, only two really stand out to me, Chris. That is, you need the money, or you're unable to work and in poor health.
Now, in both of those examples, Jim, the individuals were single and in poor health. Now, if someone listening is in the kind of marriage that may be shortening their lifespan, they'll want to take that into consideration also. But with the era of defined benefit plans being phased out in the private sector, replaced by 401ks and similar plans with no guaranteed outcomes at retirement, it would seem to me that the best thing to do is try and maximize as much as possible your benefits and have a plan that coordinates your Social Security benefits with all other sources of income. Because as you mentioned, Social Security is predictable, more so than financial markets.
Social Security planning is a big part of what we do when we put together a retirement plan. And the goal here is really to maximize benefits for the beneficiary, but also the surviving spouse. Because remember, which is, you know, if you take a look at Social Security surviving beneficiaries, 85% of Social Security survivors tend to be women. So remember, when one spouse passes away, let's take a married couple, one Social Security check will go away. So let's say that the wife is the survivor. She has an option of choosing keeping her own Social Security, if it's larger, or taking her husband's Social Security. But if she does take her husband's Social Security, she will lose hers. So when a married couple, when one spouse passes away, you are going to lose one Social Security check. So in many cases, Chris, when we're doing Social Security planning for individuals and retirement planning, we're going to look at health, number one, in terms of life expectancy of both the husband and wife. We're also going to look at, let's say, what will happen to income if losing one Social Security check. So in many cases, we may devise a plan where the husband is going to allow his Social Security to accumulate till age 70, where it's going to grow by 32%. Because by growing by 32%, should he predecease his wife will then have the option of taking her husband's Social Security, which would be a lot larger. So there is, you know, this is something that is so often ignored in retirement planning to the detriment of the survivor. And this is one of the things we try to point out overall in Social Security. It's not just taking it at what age or when should you take it, but it's also about, for example, delaying it and maximizing the benefit to ultimately the survivor.
And I can see how it would not be a difficult thing to make the wrong choice. I appreciate you going over the detail on that, Jim. It seems pretty clear to me that the lesson here is to find out everything you need to know about your Social Security benefits and then incorporate the best options that fit your own specific circumstances. Since the trustees report pointed out that the program will eventually run out of money, should current beneficiaries or those in the future be worried? What are the possible outcomes?
I mean, there are several fixes that could easily resolve the issue. The main one is extending the retirement dates, which they did in the past. And the reason, people are living longer. I mean, when Social Security first came into play, the average life expectancy for a male was age 65. Today, it's probably closer to 85. So the real issue is anytime someone touches the issue of Social Security, it's demagogued by the media. So people never hear the truth. You know, I think if they said, hey, look, people are living longer, the system, we can either raise taxes on everybody, cut back your benefits, or just extend the time frame. So instead of full retirement age at age 66, full retirement age is going to be maybe at age 68 or 69. So one side wants to extend the retirement date, while the other side wants to raise taxes and phase out benefits for upper income beneficiaries. And that, I think, would be a problem, because if you start phasing out benefits for, let's say, somebody that was fortunate enough to save, was very successful in their career, what message are you giving to young workers today? It's basically the government is saying, we're going to make you pay in the taxes, but if you save, if you're responsible, if you make a lot of money, we're going to take those benefits away from you. So in the final analysis, and here's another issue of which it could be resolved. Politicians refuse to deal with the issue, and so simply the Treasury could issue bonds, and the Fed could monetize the bonds to pay the benefits. We've all been talking about this program, and especially last week on the weekend show, we talked about the Fed's shrinking its balance sheet and also raising interest rates. Well, the Fed grew its balance sheet from about $800 billion to $4.6 trillion during the financial crisis when they came up with quantitative easing. So they could easily go back and just start buying the bonds the Treasury issues. So let's say, for example, there's a short annual shortfall between taxes, what Social Security takes in and what they're paying out in benefits. Let's say that shortfall is $100 billion. The Treasury could simply issue $100 billion worth of bonds, and the Fed could simply print the money to buy the bonds. So We've already seen this taking place, and the real risk is if you raise taxes, it becomes so onerous on the younger generation, and for social reasons, they take away those benefits for upper-income individuals who paid in the most to Social Security. Now, if you think this can't happen, let me remind you of an event that took place in 2005 when the Bush administration put in Part D Medicare to handle drugs. Up until 2005, we had one Medicare premium for everybody. After 2005, there are now four tiers of different monthly Medicare premiums based on your income. An upper income individual can pay four times the amount of monthly Medicare premiums than the average individual. So, you know, if you think they can't do it, guess again. They already did it with Medicare. They could easily do it with Social Security. So they may tinker with the benefit formula, let's say for upper income individuals, but the problem of running out of money is simply media hyperbole.
Well, Jim, it's time for our real life case study, a hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed to protect privacy. And let me make it clear to our listeners, Jim, that these folks have not legally changed their names in order for us to tell their story. We're merely substituting other names here so that our listeners won't be able to quantitatively ease them. And by the way, we do have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points that are being made here.
All right. This week's case is Timothy Newman. Tim is age 63. He was forced into early retirement due to some health issues. His life expectancy is age 78. His risk tolerance is moderate. And since he was forced into early retirement, he has a real concern about outliving his income and, of course, capital preservation. I'll give you a little background about Tim. Tim spent the latter half of his successful career as an attorney. Unfortunately, he had some major health issues in recent years that have made his job more stressful and difficult. Tim was recently diagnosed with diabetes, and he recently suffered a stroke. Now, due to health conditions and family history, his life expectancy is that of only 78. As a result of the stress created on his job, basically his doctor called him in and said, look, Tim, you continue to work at this level of stress, you know, something else is going to happen to you, and you're not going to live very long. So his doctor advised him to retire, and what he wants to do is he'd like to travel, especially now since he's got diabetes, he's got a heart condition. So he's not really sure in terms of longevity. Right now he's feeling okay. He's under medical treatment, but he does want to catch up and do some things he's always wanted to do on his bucket list. Especially now that he was forced into early retirement. Now, looking at his risk and his portfolio, his risk score was 48 versus his portfolio score is 71. And one of the main reasons for that is he was not planning on retiring early, so he was trying to build up a portfolio for later on. But unfortunately, his portfolio does not match, let's say, his current risk score. So we wanted to change that around. Now, what was important to Tim was managing his cash flow and especially not outliving his retirement assets and being able to do some of the things on his bucket list. So if we take a look at his budget was roughly about $100,000. Tim's salary at the law firm was $125,000 plus a bonus depending on what the firm was doing. So he had a surplus over his budget by roughly about $25,000. Now, here is what we were looking at in retirement. He thought he could reduce his budget by about $10,000 a year. Obviously, he could keep his existing car. There wouldn't be as much travel. So his essential budget would be roughly about $90,000 a year. His pension would be $40,000 from the firm. Social Security, taking it early at age 62, and we'll see the comparison here shortly, would be $15,800. So by taking Social Security early, he was only going to get 75%. But when we did the analysis, which we'll share here shortly, it just made so much more sense given the uncertainty of his health, his goal and his desire was basically do the traveling now while he was still in fairly good shape to do that. So he had a shortfall of about $35,000. Tim's primary residence was worth close to $600,000, of which he owed about $200,000 on that. He had roughly a little over $800,000 in his retirement accounts. His personal investments were a little over $500,000, and he had close to $90,000 in cash and checking. So he had investment assets of roughly about $1.4 million. Now, the key thing for him was managing cash flow and creating enough income for today as well as tomorrow, because he imagined that as he got older, the diabetes, the disease progressed and got worse, his medical expenses were going to be a lot more. So he was worried about running out of money. What we did is we did a balanced portfolio with a little bit more towards the fixed income side, with a yield of roughly about 3.3%. That produced about $45,000 of income. So his total income from his pension, Social Security, was a little over $100,000 versus a budget about $90,000. That would leave him a surplus of $9,000 a year. And one of the things that you've heard us talk about on the program, that the average individual married couple will spend about $250,000 out of pocket during their retirement years. And one of the things that we told Tim is, hey, that $9,000 doesn't mean an extra trip. That $9,000 of surplus needs to be put aside for your later years when your medical expenses, the drugs you're taking, and other things are going to start to mount, and you're going to need to draw on that money. So we're creating a surplus fund that we're going to be able to use and take a look at, drawing that down when his medical expenses go up as he ages. Now, what we did is we took his life expectancy and we looked at three scenarios. One was to take his Social Security at full retirement age, which would be 66. And the other one would be at age 70, meaning he would postpone it for roughly about 4 years. And then the current strategy was to take it at age 72. Now, if he took it now, his benefit would be $15,800. If he waited from 63 to age 66, it would go to $20,000. And if he waited to age 70, his benefit would be $26,000. But remember what we're dealing here. We're dealing with diabetes. He already had one stroke, and we're dealing with a health issue. So we took the benefits of each one based on his life expectancy. And based on his life expectancy, the current strategy of taking it early would pay him out roughly about $300,000. If we waited to age 70, believe it or not, he would have only about $296,000, so roughly $4,000 left. And at full retirement age, it would be a little over $311,000. So the best monetary benefit would be to wait to age 66. But once again, he needed to retire early, and we need that income. In other words, he only had right now, even taking it at age 62, he only had a surplus of about $9,000. And so if we would have waited to age 66 another 3 years, then we would have been short. He would have had to be dipping into principal. So in this case, Chris, the best outcome was to take it at age 62. And this would allow him to do the things he wanted to do. His first trip is he wanted to expend extensive time going to Asia to see New Zealand, Australia, and then Europe. So he had a bucket list of things that he wanted to do. And taking it at age 62 just made so much more sense, because it would allow him now, while he was still healthy, to do the things he wanted to do. We also explained to him that he has enough retirement assets to live comfortably throughout his retirement years. But as we discussed with him, by taking it early to mitigate some of the sequence risk, we also clarified that, you know, the extra surplus that he was going to have of around $9,000 a year that really needed to be put aside in a separate bucket and save that So in his later years, when he got maybe towards the end of his 60s or in his 70s, when his medical expenses would mount, he would have the money to cover those expenses.
Well, thank you, Jim. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on this edition of Lifetime Income. Tomorrow, we will have Mark Kantrowitz at savingforcollege.com. He's going to discuss everything you need to know about 529 plans and college savings. If you've been thinking about that topic at all, I highly recommend tomorrow's show. Mark is the author of 4 best-selling books about scholarships and financial aid.
And I highly recommend, folks, that you go to socialsecurity.gov. There is a number of publications. First of all, you should be going there if you're age 50 and find out what your Social Security benefits are. You want to do that. You want to find out what your wife would get if you're married. You can take a look at, there's a publication there that I strongly recommend for you women in the audience. It's called What Every Woman Needs to Know, because more than likely, 85% of the time, you are going to be the survivor. So visit socialsecurity.gov. There's a wealth of information there, and you should plan and know what your Social Security benefits, because especially if you work in the private sector where there are no more guaranteed pension plans, they've gone by the wayside. And by the way, that's coming to government soon in the next decade. At least you'll know what the one predictable source of income will be in your retirement. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.